Blog Talk Radio.
It's time. Politics on the Navajo Nation, brought to you by Cal Nez Design, and hosted by Cal Nez himself.
This is Cal Nez. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. We're broadcasting from Dene Restaurant here in Window Rock, Arizona, in the heart and the capital city of the Navajo Nation. Today is May 28th. I will just be as honest and as direct as I possibly can, that I am broadcasting here, and I welcome each and every one of you from the choral room here at the Navajo Nation Inn. I have my wife who came down with me, Yolanda. I have my two sons who came down with us, Cody and Dylan. And they've been by my side during this journey. It's been to myself, it's been an epic journey. And I always feel and always felt like that I'm doing it for the people. And I want everybody to know that this evening will probably be my last broadcast as the host of Politics of the Navajo Nation. And I say this with full heart. And I know that the message that we've started is not only one message that is just coming uniquely from me, but that message will always come because it is part of the Navajo culture. And that message will continue on the show. That message has always been there. It's about the Navajo people. It's about the mission of the government of the Navajo nation. What is it and what's the best functionality of that? That message will continue. And I say that with a whole heart. And I want you guys to know that I do appreciate your listenership. And that's the reason why that I'm signing off this evening. But I hope to be a guest, and I'll put the reins into the hand of one human is a person who I feel is absolutely more than qualified to take the show and to continue to take the message on behalf of the people. And I will always honor what you have taught me as I have been involved in this. My heart and my soul and every direction that whatever philosophy that I stand for, will not change. Last night, I file to become as one of the candidates for the Navajo Nation presidency. And that's the reason why I will be signing off as a regular host of the Navajo Nation or the politics on the Navajo Nation. So, again, thank you, my people. Thank you, my listeners. Thank you for standing by our side or by my side. And now this message and this philosophy, this everything that we started here is going to be continuing. But it is going to go into the hands and be directed by Ms. Marlee Shabala. And will be, so you can probably see her voice, and I'm totally excited to hear her, and I know she's more than fully capable to do this, because she's done this for a lot of years. And I welcome all the media, anybody, including Marlee, and politics on the Navajo Nation, to give me a call at any time and ask me about how things are going and how that we're going to continue this mission. So again, with, like I said, a heavy heart, I turn this over to Ms. Marlee Shabala. I'm as available as any time as before, on to as easy as a telephone call or anything. So very much want to thank you again. So I will be talking with you soon. So you are listening to, it's probably going to be the last time I will be saying this. This is Galnez, you're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, but now I am turning the time over to Ms. Marlee Shabala. Thank you.
All of our listeners here at Politics on the Navajo Nation. And this is Marlee Shabala. And we'd like to invite people out here to the Navajo Nation Quality Inn in Window Rock, Arizona. This is where we are broadcasting from this evening. And you just heard Calnez, presidential candidate, let you know that he is running for the Navajo Nation presidency and that he has decided that it is in the best interest of this show, which promotes the news of the Navajo people, that there is no misunderstanding that this show would be manipulated by him for his campaign. And so we wanted to make sure that our listeners completely understood that. I spoke with him before he made the decision, and he went ahead and decided that he wanted to go ahead and distance himself from the show so that there would be not even the appearance of that this show was being used for the promotion of his presidential campaign. And just recently, Politics on the Navajo Nation hosted a meet and greet with presidential candidates on Saturday, May 24th, at the Navajo Nation Museum. We had several presidential candidates that showed up, including former President Joe Shirley, current President Ben Shelley. We also had Edison Winika, who is the director of the Navajo Nation Election Office. And we also had some council delegate candidates. And I wanted to, since Cal was there, I really would like Cal to get on the air with me to also help me to remember.
Okay, we're back on now, and we have Dale, Sophie, Ben, Shelley, Joe Shirley Jr., Edison Winika, Chris Deschini, and also so those are the five that I remember, and it's something that will come to me very quickly. So Marley is dialing back in right now. So please hang on, and she'll be right with you. You're listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation, the Marley Shabala Notebook Show.
For those that were unable to make it to the Saturday meet and greet, we did have a great turnout. And Cal had mentioned that there were people that had arrived, and there were people there, not only the presidential candidates, but there were also council delegate candidates. And I really would like to hear from our listeners, because today was the deadline for any individual that wanted to file for his or her candidacy for president, for council delegate, for school board, for the Navajo Nation school board. That's different from the community school board. This is actually the one that is for the entire Navajo Nation, the U.S. Department of Education. And then there are positions over for the and I was out at Portland, Mexico, attending a meeting of the Navajo Provisional on
Hey, yeah, 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 ye part of the county. So we need to make housing a campaign of
Thank you, Marley. You know, it's so critical and important in our culture and our traditional way to establish a home. When you go back to the creation and journey narratives of our people, we talk about nataho, one being, which is the process of planning for the future, process of planning a home where things occur to benefit the ones that are on the journey. And in our case, we're looking at the sacred, the holy people, the Diné that were on that journey, among other journeyists. And the whole idea of creating the home, it has to do with Nat'ah, one being. Nat'ah meaning the gathering and the putting together based upon Navajo culture, Navajo traditional thinking on the design, the purpose, the function, the construction of a home. And in that journey, that first journey, it's the patrilineal journey. And in that journey, there are many things that occurred among our people and the ones that were on the journey. And the whole primary idea in that journey was to find eventually a place for home. And when that place, we arrived at that place, Tihinag Ekotaide is what we say. We've traveled in the sacred holy way, and we found this place called Zante, meaning the interpretation means at the place of the woman. Okay, Sanate is what we're saying, but in ceremonial language we call it Zante. So in that place we call Ehashchetke Hawanbiyin. So there are two separate activities or two separate ceremonial functions that occur. One is the planning function, that's not one being. The second function is as the place of the feminine, the place of birth, the place of growth, place of nurturing, the place of peace, the place of goodness. That is the renditions of these two the characteristics of these two categories of knowledge and information in those songs. In other words, Nat'ah means the functional planning of the mind, dissecting, analyzing, decision making, and that type of stuff. That's a kind of a philosophical process. Whereas we get to the place of Sanate, the feminine then is given the authority and responsibility to create the place where there will be peace. So Hajanasli, that was always the objective. And in that way, the feminine is so important. In other words, our homes is the place of the feminine where birthing occurs, where healing occurs, where peace is discussed, and where progress is made very clear. In addition to the nature of the masculine, so those two complement each other. One does not dominate the other. They are there to complement each other. So when we take that philosophy or that the nature of what that data is within our culture nor within our traditional narratives, we talk about the modern contemporary idea of constructing, building, designing, putting together infrastructure, putting together all the necessary things that where people will live in a constructed building. Well, that is so critical. Now, having said that, we also must look at the other side of that. It is very beautiful. It's a philosophy. It's a goal. It's an objective. However, when you look at the reality here on the reservation, there are many homeless people. Let me give an example. If you ever go down towards Sanders into that relocation area and you look around that community, people have abandoned their nice homes in favor of returning back where their umbilical cord is in the ground, the place of their aboriginal homeland. Now, that activity is, in a way, a primordial, primary, basic functional idea where We are a people that want to return home, a place of birth, a place of comfort, a place of peace, a place of nurturing, a place for caring one another, So that desire to go back there is very, very strong. And then we find other places, like, for instance, over at Redwater Pond, the issue regarding the people that are affected by the uranium tailings for the past 30 years now. Those people deserve a place to live, a nice home, new infrastructure, good infrastructure, clean running water, quality air, all that kind of stuff. And for the past 30 years, it hasn't happened. I mean, they're there. They have illness, psychological illness, biophysical illness, spiritual illness. I mean, I saw pictures of lambs being born that were hairless. The Redwater Pond community. I think that we really need to step back, and when we get into the process of government and the hogan, the home, is a process of government at the true foundational level. What we're talking about to some extent here is the process of election, which is the process of the English and Western concepts of moving forward with governance and self-governance and those type of issues. But I think when you get back down to the Hogan, the emphasis is your home, is your place of governance. It's your place where the sacred fire burns, life, existence of life, where the sacred air is, the quality of air. And we're starting to talk about environmental issues here just by using the example of your home. So in that sense, there's so much knowledge and information that we can assist and can articulate and agree or disagree about things. But I think that the eventuality of constructing those homes, constructing our home here, making sure that our sacred fire is burning, that the sacred air is still there, the sacred water, the cleanliness of the water is still there, and of course the earth that we must have responsibility for. Those are the issues that we sing about, we pray about, we articulate as if they are a living being that exists not only as an inanimate object, but it is us. We are those representations of, say, a home. And I think that looking at those metaphors and those kind of analogies is so important for the younger folks to understand, to ask questions about it, to become intelligent because of it, and make choices and decisions that, yes, we are among the richest nation in the world here, and then also on the Navajo Nation. And some places I hear statistics about 65% unemployment. I hear about just many, many things that the Navajo Nation always uses to gain money from federal sources and other sources. But when you look back and you step back and says, why is it that we're still at that level of unemployment? What's going on? What's happening? Something needs to change here.
Well, what do you think that we actually have homelessness?
Yes.
On the National Reservation.
Boop.
Yeah. Where different communities have homes and why it's important.
Yes.
And that's very, that's the basis of what brought us back here to our homeland.
Yes.
Why are people suffered? So many of them were lost.
Yeah.
They were lost. They were killed. They were murdered. They were molested. They were raped. There was so much. They went through so much atrocity.
Yeah.
And they had to go so far away from home that they endured.
Yeah.
That's in our blood.
That's in our blood.
And
it's forever.
And do campaigns and
Yeah. So it's so important to go back and return to the place of the sheepskin, to return to the place of planning, to return back to the place of healing, to return back to those places that have been there forever. And to me, I think when we go through these campaign issues and stuff like that, I mean, I've been on this earth for 63 years now. And ever since I was small, I've heard the same rhetoric over and over, economic development, education, this type of thing. And it seems to me that we're still at a certain level, and that progress needs to be a paradigm shift. There needs to be a movement to where we make things happen instead of just talking about it. And I think that's what I'm saying. So therefore, that Hogan, sitting there, planning, designing, effectuating, making things happen, reasoning to the east, to the south, the whole idea of Nahata, action, momentum, making things happen, to the south then, or to the west, and then looking at the wisdom that we gather from planning and through action, and then making that an understanding and realizing that, hey, we can do something better. So when we do something better, we articulate those through the night, doing the healing ceremonies, the chants, the songs, the planning process that are embedded within those sacred rituals. Those are, I think, really critical points in asking. Perhaps we can ask her, what is your plan? What is your desire? And perhaps those people in authority might be able to listen to that and make some real concrete decisions and make things happen. As you know, I mean, those questions have been forever. I mean, as a kid, I remember people asking those questions. And it just seems to be that for some reason there's no advancement, there is no movement forward. And that's why I'm saying that there has to be a paradigm shift. In our culture, in our traditional ways, there's always been a paradigm shift. There's always a time for change. There's always a time for progress. There is always a time for improvement. Is what we call that, the achievement way. And there's so much data and information, songs, prayers, ritual object preparation, use of those ritual objects to demonstrate that these are things that are valuable, that we can use to as a foundation for progress. Instead, we use these Western methodologies and stuff, and we seem to be just stuck in the sand.
Statements that were made by some of the presidential candidates.
after all these meetings, it's very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
How tall we are. We work in the mind to live there with us.
Yeah.
And yet, the response from the elected officials who were there was, well, what's your plan? It's so clear that I don't hear anything else. Is there a reason why maybe no one else is
concerned? Mm-hmm.
And that bothered me because I'm a news reporter.
Having said all these things, we're looking at something that appears to be very bleak, and it is. We can't deny that. On the other hand, looking at it from the positive side, what can we do as young folks? What can we do to participate in our future here? And I always say that there has to be a paradigm shift. We need to take a serious look at Navajo national policy. We need to be very specific about that and identify the things that can be done through those. When I say policy, I'm talking about the Navajo Nation Code. And some of that stuff that is in there is ancient stuff, and it has never been modified. And I know that. I mean, for instance, there is no policy regarding the idea of the standards for constructing a home. None of that exists in the Navajo Nation Code. But, however, as I indicated earlier, that there is the development of structure based upon, or homes based upon, the Natahawan Biyin, the Shetiawan Biyin. There is already a standard using those songs to construct a place of home, okay, that is sacred. Those are things that I'm saying that we need to modify that policy, even though the Navajo Nation Code, Title I, Chapter 2, allows for the use of traditional and traditional and cultural information to help in making decisions, in the process of decisions. To me, it's just being used by attorneys to continue that combat by trial. That Navajo Nation Code, Title I, Chapter 2, is a stargate for healing. It's a gateway to understand how we can work together, how we can reestablish peace, how we can enjoy health, good psychological health, good spiritual health, good physical health. That's the idea behind that Title I, Chapter 2, Hojong Jinat, the blessing way planning, those three combinations need to be brought together, and we need to articulate specifically what is our policy from this day on and out. We already know the evidence. We already know the statistics. We already know. We've heard the crying and the gnashing of teeth and the pitifulness that is out there in our communities. But I think that as a dynamic, strong, durable people, we need to do something about it.
Do you think that is a, when you talk about the young people, that they're born by some of the and there is limited employment, but any of our people could put together a thesis that can contrast how many Navajo graduates from law school do we have that could be hired to go in and take apart the Navajo Nation code and work with, you know, from individuals like yourself at the Blue House to, you know, start revamping those laws that the council uses as its foundation for making decisions.
Yeah.
And even doing a good analysis and not just the legislative branch, but the judicial branch,
the executive branch,
you know, having our young people, having our own people do the
evaluation.
Not ASU, Arizona State University,
yeah,
the University of Arizona or Northern Arizona University.
Position. Yeah. Perhaps I can start off with that part that we talk about culture and traditions, and then she can carry on with the discussion. Okay. Saturday, I think it was, we had the session here at the Navajo Nation Museum, and at that time, the stage was set to where the consideration of Navajo cultural and traditional knowledge, information, and data needs to be underscored and brought forward as a part of the whole traditional, or as part of our own self-governance process among the Diné. And I used the example of leadership. And as far as leadership is concerned, one who has the ability to lead people must have what we call a tzeshesh, or a sacred mountain bundle. And in that sense, you know, that stage was set. And I talked about the definition of nahat'ah, that evening. And for some reason, people have a tendency to think that it means planning. It really doesn't. When we talk about the analysis of the word itself, we talk about two words, na, hat, or three words, na, hat. Na is a ceremonial word for the universe. Hat means to take it from the universe. In other words, law of the universe, law of the creation, law of the holy people, law of the standards set for our future. And we take that law and that knowledge, we analyze it, we dissect it, we make choices and decisions because of it. And we take that na-bi-de-chat, and then we receive it. That's moved to the south. So the east is na-ta, haro-na-hat-a, is to the south. You take that physical object, you make something happen with it, the action. So I provided that foundation for the discussion of that evening because these individuals are running to be in the leadership position. And the question basically was like, how were people put into positions of leadership in the olden days? My point was, you have to have that tzeshesh. You have to have the knowledge of the Diné. You had to be honored by them. They had to respect you. They had to, you had to display, I guess the better way I put it is, you have to walk the walk and talk the talk in leadership.
Navajo leadership.
No.
Something, there's echo going on. It's nothing.
I was, Mr. Blumhouse, I was wondering what was one, well, I, like I said, when you were talking about the issues regarding Navajo leadership, there was one question that I've always carried, especially when our Navajo elected officials make decisions regarding the environment and creating jobs, and that seems to be a constant theme. You've been on the Navajo Nation as long as I have been within the Navajo government, and you hear the discussions of why we're going to vote for this huge coal mine or we're going to vote for uranium, and it's always based on jobs. And so, but these elements, they're dangerous to the environment, to the land, the people, everything. And right now we have some callers, so I'd like to hear from them. Can you hear all right? Okay, we're going to start with our caller. Hello? Are you there? Hello?
Can you talk a little bit louder? Hello? Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, good. Hi.
Yes. My name is Delbert.
Delbert? What would you like to tell us?
Well, I couldn't really hear you, Marley, and I could hear Carol, but I can't. I don't even know what you guys are talking about. Maybe you guys can fix your online stuff.
Okay, well, okay. You know what? What we're doing is we are trying to. We have cell phones that we're using as our microphones, Delbert. So, can you hear me all right? So, Delbert, are we just calling in to let us know? Okay, we have another caller, 8054. Are you there? And please let us know what you're thinking about. What you'd like to share with us? Hello? Hi. This is Politics on the Navajo Nation, and we'd like to hear from our caller. And I can't hear you there. Can you hear me? Okay. Well, that's fine. Our caller has decided that they're going to just listen to us, and sometimes we get calls like that where we have people that don't realize that they don't have to click the one button on their phone. All they have to do is just call in and sit back and listen to the conversation. But we really would like to listen to our caller nurse. And we have an hour left on Politics on the Navajo Nation. And I wasn't able to make it out to Thursday's presidential debate out in Pinon, Arizona on the Navajo Reservation. And so I'd like to invite our callers to please call in, those of you that went to the presidential debate, and share with the rest of us what you thought about it. Please call 347-989-0048. That number again is 347-989-0048. And we had a meet and greet on Saturday at the Navajo Nation Inn. And we had a number of presidential candidates who came and talked briefly with us. And once again, though, we're going to take a short break, but I really would like to hear from the callers. I really want to hear from you what your, especially if you went to the presidential debate at Pinon or at Winter Rock, which was the politics on the Navajo Nation meet and greet with presidential candidates, council delegates. The phone number here is 347-989-0048. And
you're
like
listening
to comment,
Navajo Digital Radio, politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that's raising standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Operating Navajo Graphic Design and Advertising Agency, CalNez Design.
Yata'e, this is Marley Shabala, Tohegleni Shlom, Nashtashabashishchin, and you are listening to Politics on the Navajo Nation. And you can call in and make a comment, share some news, let us know what you're thinking, please. Please call us at 347-989-0048. And I have someone here at the Quality Inn in Winter Rock, Arizona, who attended the politics on the Navajo Nation meet and greet. And she's going to share with us some of her, how she thought the audience was reacting to the answers and give a little bit of her perspective. And her name is Yolanda. And so, Yolanda, why don't you let us, you were there, so what did you notice about the audience there?
Hi, everyone. This is Yolanda, and really great to have you on air tonight. I was there on Saturday afternoon at the meet and greet, and it was, you know, a really great occasion. I was really, really impressed by the many folks who attended that came out and in the rainstorm. I mean, it was pouring rain outside, and there were plenty, plenty of people who were quite interested in what our current candidates for the presidency were saying about the people and about their issues. So what I did was I took the opportunity to go around the room and really meet individuals who were interested in a multitude of topics. There were about half the audience were women and half were men, and I would say you had anywhere from, mostly I would say probably middle-aged folks who were quite interested. There were a few youth, and as I went around the room at this meet and greet and met people, I was really interested in what brought them out? Why were they there? What were their concerns? Were they here in terms of their interest in talking to people about their issues, as whether it was as an employee or as people who are voters who are just generally interested in any of the topics facing the nation. And so it was actually a very wonderful, remarkable and personal experience to stand face-to-face with every person one by one going down the line and asking women who were interested in, you know, I found that women were very interested in a change. Actually, it wasn't just women. It was both men and women who were really, really interested in change. And what I asked them was, what does change represent to you? What does that mean? So they were very interested. Their response was, I'm not interested in the same old thing. And they were very negative about particular candidates who have been around for a long time, and they felt more or less, I would say, discouraged about the current pool. And so, and honestly, I was kind of surprised because, you know, I think now, this is my personal opinion, that those who are running for this election are individuals who deserve, I think, our respect, because it is not easy to run a campaign. It is a very difficult job to do. You're expending an enormous amount of resources, limited resources typically, because just to run a campaign. I mean, it runs in the high numbers depending on how serious you are about it. But not only that, you have families who are affected, you have your spouse, you have your relatives. It's really a really very involved task to carry out a campaign. So on that note, Marley, you know, I'll turn it back over to you because those were some of the feelings that I were expressed by some of the people, voters in particular, who were there on Saturday.
This is Marley Chabal again.
Yeah, I agree.
And Mr. Bluehouse, you were there at the meet and greet, and why don't you share some of your perspectives about what you saw and heard?
Well, in observation at a distance I was at, it was interesting to note that body language, eye contact, verbalization, those are usually good indicators of sincerity, honesty, integrity. And then at the same time, you also recognize that people, some of them did not really have a plan. They were making it up as it was going along. And those were the things that I observed as a trained individual in my criminal justice background. I had to rely on those observations. And I think our Navajo people out there at the Hogan level, where the smoke rises through the smoke hole, that place where there is life and living, they understand those type of things. So they are very intelligent. They are very wise. They observe. They look at body language. They look at eye contact. They look at the verbalization and those things, you know, the action words. If you don't have action words and you're kind of wishy-washy in your language, they'll recognize very clearly the national Kalyana. They are very intelligent. They're very smart. And I think that it's time that people who are in a position of politics and going into leadership roles need to honestly, with integrity, listen with the heart, listen with the spirit, and see things, you know, with eyes closed, so to speak, because when you look through your eyes closed, you see things differently, you understand things differently, as opposed to sometimes with your eyes that you've been given, those things can deceive you. So in that sense, it's so important to understand that these people are very real, they are very based, they are very intelligent, they are very good-natured people who have something to offer. But in many times we see that politicians and individuals who make these promises all these years, you know, at the end, you know, you hear grandmas and grandpas saying that, well, we heard that before.
During the meet and greet at the Navajo Nation Museum, I had an opportunity to be to ask the presidential candidates questions,
mm-hmm.
and you heard their answers. Did you think that they answered my questions? Because one of the other individuals that was there said, you know, they didn't seem to be answering your questions, Marley.
That's very true. They give you the political answer. They do not give you only the skeleton. They never get to the meat of the matter and make it, okay, this is the way it should be, and this is my plan, and this is how I want to execute it, and this is what I want to based upon. My decisions and
go.
My directions and my power and my control needs to happen in this way. Nobody said that. I would ask them that because they are put in the position of the council, do they have the real wisdom?
Ask the question again. Ask the question again.
Can't hear you.
Okay. All right. No, I'm sorry, listeners. I had the mute on my cell phone. Anyway, I asked Mr. Stilmer Bluehouse, and he was at the meet and greet at the Navajo Nation Museum last Saturday. What question would he ask a Navajo Council delegate?
When they are put into that position of planning, decision-making, making recommendations, policy, law execution, law creation, and those type of things, I'll ask them, in order for you to do that, do you understand the mountain songs? Do you understand the data and the information that allows us to make choices and decisions to help our people to heal, to move forward, to have progress? Do you sing those songs? Do you understand the content and the nature and the purpose of those songs? And if one is to sing that before me and I understand it, then yeah, I would truly honor the person. So that's just my position from the cultural and traditional viewpoint.
And Mr. Bluehouse, do you think that there is a difference between a presidential candidate and a Navajo Council candidate? I mean, sometimes it seems that one of the three branches will place themselves above the other.
That is a battle that is very apparent in the tribal government. The folks out at the place where the smoke rises through the smoke hole, they are aware of what's happening here in Winder Rock. They're always aware that sometimes the tribal council gets into the issues of micromanaging the executive branch responsibility. There should be that clear delineation of authority and responsibility that needs to be made. Or needs to be clarified if necessary, because sometimes the council starts reaching over into the business of the executive branch of government, while the executive branch is given the responsibility to execute the policy of the Navajo Nation or to implement that policy. Most often the tribal council has a tendency to step into that realm and start pushing and bossing people around. So that's not the nature of it. When you compare that to, say, a home, the responsibilities in the home between a man, a woman, and the children, those are allocated based upon the same concept of the three-branch government when you really step back and you take a serious look at it. Okay? The executive branch is basically the responsibility of the male counterpart. The feminine is the legislative. And then the balance between the two is the child. Okay, that would be the one that is most honest, the one that would be the one that carries the scale of balance within the family and in the household. When you go back and look at the traditional cultural narratives and information, the songs, the prayers, the ritual object preparation, the ritual object execution, the sand paintings, all the narratives that happen, but even then, do these people follow that rigid structure that is necessary to accomplish what it is to be, to govern and to be governed?
This is Marla Shabal again, Politics on the Navajo Nation. And we're talking with Mr. Filmer Bluehouse, and much of the discussion here again is on the Navajo Nation elections. and today was the deadline for individuals to file their candidacy for Navajo Nation President, Navajo Nation Council, Navajo Nation Education Board, and the Navajo Election Board of Supervisors. And I'd like to invite our listeners to please call in. We have about 40 minutes left of the show, and we really want to hear from you. Please share some thoughts with us about what you're doing out there to improve Navajo government, or what you want to see as an improvement for Navajo Nation government. Give us some solutions. And the phone number
is
here is 347-989-0048. And that number again is 347-989-0048. And in our discussions with Mr. Wilmer Bluehouse, he brought up that he sees the legislative branch as feminine and the presidency is masculine. But there's an issue regarding that that has been out there regarding whether or not a Navajo woman can be president. And I really want to hear your thoughts about that, and I'd also hear others like to hear our listeners' thoughts about that too.
Yeah. That's a very it's an issue that I think we need to discuss at some point as intelligent Navajos to come to some consensus or conclusion regarding that issue, because one time I confronted some medicine people saying that, look, if the female is not a leader in the natural world, then I shall not repeat white shell woman, changing woman, stick woman, mountain woman, fire woman, corn pollen woman. Those should be eliminated from my prayers. But I said, I won't do that. I won't do that because I believe that the feminine leadership is very real. The feminine responsibility is very real. Why would we have a deity, our first matriarch, our mother, white shell woman, changing woman, the one that cried in the cornfield, all those beings, all that one single being that was created to give birth to the masculine, the warriors, the monster slayer, and born for water. There was problems on this earth's surface, and therefore the masculine was created to provide for that comfort, to provide for that protection. So in that sense, I think the complement process, the process of complementary roles in Navajo society is very real. But when you look at it from the contemporary viewpoint of our neighbor Biliganas, you know, there has a tendency to be to say that the feminine is stronger than the masculine is stronger than the woman. So in our world, there's a balance that has to be very clear and used to heal one another, as opposed to having the stratification of power and that kind of stuff.
Hello, Dr. A, this is Marley Shabala, Politics on the Navajo Nation. And now we're going to also hear from one of our regular news people also here on Politics on the Navajo Nation, and that is Mr. Bill Donovan. He's a correspondent for the Navajo Times newspaper, and he's also an editor for the Gallup Independent. So what's happening, Mr. Bill Donovan?
Marley, we were hoping to give you a list tonight of the people who are running for tribal president. But election officials for the tribe said they would not release anything probably until tomorrow or maybe Friday, because they didn't want to make any mistakes. There have been 14 people who have picked up papers to run for tribal president. Now, we know for sure that these people are running because they paid their $1,500. They are Donald Benally, Kenneth Maryboy, Ben Shelley, Joe Shirley Jr., Myron McLaughlin, Christopher Deschini, and Dale Edison Soce. Now, they were in the last printout that was given to us by the election office. Now, we know that there were two other candidates who paid their fees because they were at last night's debate.
You dropped them.
At Pinon. Those are Edison Wanika, who's the director of the tribe's election office, and the other one is Dwayne Chiliazzi, the former council delegate from Shiprock. So that gives us 9 people. There could be as many as 14, so we have to wait until probably tomorrow to find out who else is running. The interesting part of the debate last night was that Joe Shirley did not show up. There was still no word today on why he didn't do that. But all the other candidates did, and most of them came out pretty well, we are told. So we'll probably report next week on who's running and maybe some of the odds on who's going to win. This is Bill Donovan with the Newsflash from the Navajo Reservation.
Mr. Bill Donovan, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, cool. Hey, I want to ask you what you always have some great insights about presidential candidates, the council delegate candidates. And so have you asked presidential candidate Donald Benally about his issues regarding the riot? The
Remember Donald Benally ran before. Came in third 4 years ago, and this was a big issue 4 years ago. It's not quite that big an issue this time because he's already addressed that. But 4 years ago, he said that he was innocent. He was not at that riot that caused all those problems. He said at the time of the riot, he was at an advisory committee meeting, and he said he felt that he was being punished because they wanted to go after McDonald, and they went after him. After that, I talked to Joe Lodge, who was the prosecutor, and Lodge says they had proof that he was there. And so there's a difference of opinion about whether or not he was or was not there.
And some of the other presidential candidates that are up for the candidacy, President Shelley, and also President Shirley. Do you remember, and I asked President Shirley about this during the meet and greet, which was, you know, that he had tribal elections charges filed against him for nepotism. Well, actually, they were filed against him and Vice President Dayish. Do you remember that, Bill?
Yes, I do. That was in the first couple of months. This is regarding his wife and the Vice President's wife. They were put in as directors of the First Lady's office, and they set up for a while there at the Second Lady's office. And what they were going to, what Shirley was doing, trying to do was pay both of them for doing that. And he was told emphatically that he could not do that. The First Lady and the Second Lady do not get paid for that. That was something they were supposed to do on their own to help the tribe. And what we heard after that, too, was that he had promised the Vice President that, because he was going from a salary of, like, I think, $85,000 a year to $45,000, that his money would be reimbursed, would be increased by his wife's earnings. And that didn't happen. And I think that's one reason why he decided not to run again 4 years later.
And do you remember, I also asked President, former President Shirley, when he had finished his term and it was the usual practice to have that fire sale where the president and vice president and the speaker took the vehicles, the furnishing in their tribal homes, and during when Shirley was leaving, they actually included Chief of Staff Patrick Sandoval.
Yes. We heard that there were problems with that, but there's always been problems with that. This is not the first time that this has happened. I remember when McDonald was first let out of office back in 86. They had a fund for about $300,000 in which to give out money to small businesses. And on the last day of his administration, that whole $300,000 was turned over to McDonald's supporters, and the tribe never got very much of that money back.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that. Bill, you are a gem for Navajo history, even though you are a white man. I And you know what? I'm going to be taking over this show, so we need to start our little news chat again.
Oh, you remember that? And those are the good old days.
Yeah, that would. And you know, I wish you had come to the meet and greet, because it was really interesting, especially when I had an opportunity to interview the First Lady, Martha Shelley. And I don't know if you know about this, but there was a report given to one of the council committees regarding the appointment of commissioners to the Office of Navajo Women, which has been pretty dormant for several years. And according to the plan of operation, two of the appointments would be made by the Office of Navajo Women and Children, or three, either two or three. And then two or three would be made by the Office of the First Lady. But the Office of the First Lady made all five appointments, and now that legislation is moving forward under the sponsorship of Delegate Kathy Finale. I asked First Lady Martha Shelley about why she did that, and she really had a hard time explaining. And actually, she wasn't given the opportunity to complete the answer, because President Ben Shelley, in front of everyone there, started bumping her. Silver Bluehouse was there. I'm not making this up. You're still on the line, Silver.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes. That's what I referred to, body language.
Oh, okay.
It was
that's
obvious. Those among other things that I observed.
But did you see Shelley at the debate on Tuesday night? He was
very, very animated.
What was that again?
At the debate on Tuesday night, Shelley was very animated, more animated than I've ever seen him at anything. He was waving his hands, he was yelling, he was screaming sometimes, as opposed to the other ones, which just talked in normal voices. But I thought that was very interesting, the way he acted at that debate.
It's interesting that I overheard him say, "I don't want Marley Shabala to interview me."
He said that at the Navajo Times.
It's like, whoa, what's going on here?
No one told me that until after I did the interview, Bill Donovan. But,
well, I remember one time we were going to get an interview with Shelley at the Navajo Times, and they asked who you want to do the interview, and he said, "Anybody but Marley Shabala."
Oh, gosh. If we have that kind of leadership, it's kind of, I don't know. I want to say a few things, but I won't. I'm diplomatic here.
Okay. Another thing I saw that was kind of interesting at the debate on Tuesday night was that everybody spoke, except for Chris DeChinney, who's not very fluent in Navajo, spoke in Navajo. And I always thought that the purpose of the streaming on the Internet was to be able to get their message out to urban Navajos, many who don't speak Navajo, young people. And I thought that kind of negated that purpose.
Questions that were being asked of the candidates,
Jill? Mostly very general questions. What are your issues? What are you going to do if you get elected? Stuff like that. Nothing really controversial.
And who was asking the questions?
The moderator for the Diné Policy Institute.
And so they didn't
which
have
I had never
any,
heard of before.
Huh. So they didn't have any journalists that were there asking questions?
No, they were not allowed to ask questions. Now they're going to have five or six more of these debates, and they're going to open it up. They said some of the debates to people who are listening on the Internet. They're going to provide them a way to get the questions into them and ask those questions. So maybe you can change your name and you can submit some questions.
Okay, I'll go by the name of Bill Donovan. So you'll be getting the list of presidential candidates, council delegates, and also the Board of the Election Supervisors and Navajo Nation Election Office. Right,
yes.
Bill, tomorrow?
Yes. And one other thing I want to bring up. I heard this rumor, and I was trying to verify it today, but I couldn't do it. But there are rumors going around Window Rock that Sandra Jeff is going to run for tribal president.
Sandra Jeff was going to be running for tribal president?
That's what the rumor was in Window Rock today. I have no idea if she's fouled or not, or if she's even thinking about fouling. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
So was Edison Winika at the presidential debate?
Yes, he was.
And so how were his answers?
I don't know. They were in Navajo.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. here we thought that he didn't make it there either, along with President Shirley.
I was told he was there. I was told he was there at somewhere. And because that's how I found out that he was running for president. Because his name was Lizard.
He showed up at the politics on the Navajo Nation meet and greet and talked about some of the election laws and regulations. And so that was interesting talking to him. But I didn't get the opportunity to ask him why, as a presidential candidate and especially as a director of the election office, why he was not taking action or, I don't know what the proper word would be, but, you know, holding Council Delegate Dwayne Sinigini accountable for his DUI.
But he told me that he doesn't have the power to do that. And under tribal law, someone has to make a complaint. And at that time, the Election Commission, Board of Supervisors, addresses it. The Board of Commissioners cannot on their own disqualify someone without a complaint.
But the Navajo Nation Council amended the law and handed over that authority to the Navajo Nation Election Office to be the one that would enforce those codes.
But there's got to be a complaint first. There's got to be a complaint. That says that starts the investigation.
Okay, Bill. Thank you for that clarification.
I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you. You get it. And that was Bill Donovan. He's a correspondent with the Gallup Independent, he's a correspondent with the Navajo Times newspaper, and he's also an editor for the Gallup Independent. And years ago, Bill, myself, and the Navajo Times editor, Tom Arviso, and we had a news reporter from a Gallup station, Sharon Mays, and myself, we would all get together on KPNN, and we did a weekly show. I don't know if you remember it, Homer. We called it News Talk.
Oh, yes, News Talk. Yeah, I remember that.
And our listeners really enjoyed it because it was a discussion among the local news media, and we gave background information on our news stories, what didn't get into the paper. And we also had people calling in. And I remember the first time that we did it, we were begging people to call us in. And thank goodness we have a caller right now. So caller 8307. Are you on the line? Hello?
Yeah, hello, Marley?
Yes.
Yes, hi. Yes, I enjoyed your little broadcast here. I just wanted to congratulate Cal for wanting to get into the race. I just wanted to make a little comment about the Navajo Nation president as a woman. I think it's a good idea. I think it's about time. I don't know what as us men are afraid of. Time will end eventually. You might as well ended it sooner than later. You know, that's just the way I feel. But I think the women have done a very good job. I think a lot of leaders outside the United States have done a wonderful job. And I think it's about time, you know, that we put a woman in office. And I really truly believe that they can probably do the job, if not better than men. And I'm not, you know, just saying that because I think men had the opportunity to do so for so long, and I don't know where their morals and integrity stand at this time.
Yeah, this is Phil Bluehouse. Just to comment on that, I think you're right up the right. You're barking up the right alley here. It's important to acknowledge that our very first leader on the Earth's surface was a woman called White Shell Woman. She is the one that was given the responsibility of leadership. And when you look into the Blessing Way songs and things like that, that's where her names are very clearly enunciated as the maternal leader on the Earth's surface. That's the way it seems to be, and I agree with you that it's time. However, we also really have to take a serious look at the role of leadership in the traditional and cultural way. You know, the feminine role is very clear. It's more, it's like for peacemaking. It's like for healing. It's like for unity of effort. It's for the idea of getting things done. Is what we call it. And I think that in there is so much data and information on how we can create that place of healing here among our people, because it is definitely important that we begin to heal this nation as a group, rather than doing the rhetoric and the political posturings and those kind of things. So when that happens, it's not a good place to be, because your voice is sacred, your mind is sacred. When you make all these promises and you don't follow through with it, that speaks loud and clear.
Thank you, Mr. Buhaus. And to our caller, could you give me your name and where you're from?
Yes, my name is Delbert Brown. I am originally out of Lupton, Arizona, LA.
Well,
I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I really appreciate what Cal has done and really brought out a lot of these political issues. And I just wanted to thank him at this time, and I wanted to wish him good luck. And this kind of goes back to what we believe in, you know. Put it back right the way it was. And I even hear that they're going to even increase the council delegates back up to 48 or something like that. You know, and it's just too many lawmakers to me. Just too many lawmakers. I mean, we're living in an area that's supposed to be as big as, Rhode Island, I don't know, Virginia, whatever it is. But, you know, they only have like two senators, lawmakers. And I think that even 24 lawmakers is just way too much. I think we need to reduce it down to maybe 5 or something like that. I think that that might be able to be better for the Navajo Nation. Whatever it is that they say, it's just like a never-ending cycle. It just continues. Somebody's got to break that cycle, and maybe a woman can do that.
Delbert.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That
was Delbert, and thank you, Delbert, for calling in and sharing your thoughts with our listeners. And I really encourage our listeners to please call in, because we have less than 20 minutes, and we'd really like to, not just me, but this is an open discussion that we have, and that's always been done in the Navajo way, where we all talk about what is concerning us, what is heavy on our mind, or maybe in our heart, on our spirit. And I was always told that once you verbalize it, that it's part of the healing process, and your comments, we just want to hear from you, whether it's you have a compliment or you have a criticism, but we'd really like to hear some solutions. And Delbert had a great suggestion there. And the phone number, again, is, we have a new caller. Caller 8252, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, I can hear you. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Tino Redsteer. I can barely hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Tino.
Okay. My question is that it's kind of related to what you're talking about, but it's regarding that Navajo Housing Authority and their $14 million or whatever they're ready to give back to the government. I'd like to hear that as one of the points of concern for these candidates that are running for office. We don't hear anything else besides what you've written in your journal regarding that what's going on with Navajo Housing Authority. That's another issue that keeps repeating itself every 4 years throughout the whole process. That's my concern. Thank you.
And Tino, if you don't mind, why do you feel that a house, a home, is important to you and to others?
Would you say that again, please?
Yeah, I said, why do you think that a home is important, and why should it be important to our elected officials and to these candidates that are running for elected office?
Okay, I feel that it's important because how many people are living, like 10 to 12 people to a home, even for relocation people, don't even have a home and don't even have a place to put up a home. And we're putting up with all kind of administrators that are there just for their checks and for benefits or whatever, and all we ever get out of them are excuses of how come they're not doing their job. And it's really frustrating to know that that's going on. And even when I return home, it's always a bad scene. And I'd like to hear some candidates talk about that issue particularly. Thank you.
Thank you, Tino. Yeah. And that was Tino Redstar for our listeners, and his concern, Redsteer, and his concern was most recent report that was done by Navajo Housing Authority to the Resources and Development Committee and the Navajo Committee, and that happened yesterday. And in that report, Navajo Housing Authority is facing the possibility of having the U.S. Housing Urban Development Office take back about $102 million, which the Navajo Nation Housing Authority has not spent. And the Housing Authority actually has a total of probably about $400 million, according to one of the letters that was sent to NHA by HUD. But NHA has made a settlement offer to HUD, which includes returning about $19 million instead of the $102 million. And they said that they'll spend the remaining balance of the $102 million in 2 years. And if they don't spend it, then HUD can also take back that money. And the council members that were present were outraged, to say the least. Well, majority of them were. Some of them weren't. And they were wondering, under what law did NHA have the authority to tell a federal government entity that they could take back federal housing dollars? And so that question is now before the council, and we'll be hearing more about that. And just a little bit of information also. A portion of that $19 million that HUD or NHA is saying that they back to HUD was earmarked for Shiprock Housing and also for the St. Michael's Special Education. So call your candidates and call your elected officials. Call Navajo Housing.
You know, it's interesting that the observations are being made. It seems to me that there has to be a very dynamic process of revamping some of the policies, the laws of the Navajo Nation, and to make it where things happen more than often rather than not. All too often, I've heard this over and over, where excuses are being made not to do something. And usually it's made reference to a specific law or, you know, something that may be in the way of policy or even the politics that happens within the tribal government. One of the things I constantly hear is the Navajo Nation does not work together. They're building silos, and everybody has their own little silo, and within that silo there's activity and function, but it's not ever shared with their neighbors next door, the next silo, and that kind of stuff. So that is very problematic. So to me, it's very clear that we must redevelop policy in those areas.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that comment about the government operating in silos. But in this instance, President Ben Shelley actually told the council to back off, that he would take care of this. And obviously he didn't. But I'm also going to take a comment right now from Yolanda. Yolanda, you there?
I am, Marley. Thank you. You know, I hear this so many times. I mean, I've heard this in the past where we've had a large amount of federal funding going back to into the U.S. federal general funds. And this, I just feel like you've hit a sore spot with me today, in particular when we're talking about home, which is an absolutely vital element of everyone who lives on the Navajo Nation. When we have over and over again elected officials who are in office to make sure that they are taking care of the well-being overall, especially in terms of regulation and the use of public money, they need to be accountable. When there's accountability and when there is transparency in government, then that allows us as their constituents to see what is happening. I had recently posted that the Navajo Nation budget is soon here, will be looked at and is in review of each of these departments where money is going, and you have department heads who are making these decisions about their budgets. When you have the the Navajo Housing Authority, which is a very important element of the Navajo tribal government, who is not using the money to build homes for the Navajo people, I really don't understand it. And that you illustrate by telling us this today, you illustrate to me how important and how necessary it is for us to have, again, accountability, having our elected officials being accountable to the publics that they serve, and also to be transparent in that process. If we knew as Navajo people there was $102 million for the construction of homes, especially those folks in Shiprock, New Mexico, how many homes is worth $102 million? It's inexcusable, clearly inexcusable, for this amount of money to go back to the federal government if that is going to happen. Thanks, Marley.
Thank you. Thank you, Yolanda. I really appreciate those words. And let me tell you that some of the council delegates that were there in the council and listening to the report, and then all of a sudden this bomb is dropped on them that the Navajo Housing Authority is offering to return $19 million. Council Delegate Russell Begay was there, and he called what NHA was doing was putting Shiprock on the sacrificial block. And there was a lot of discussion about how there was even a call by Delegate Leonard Sosi for NHA CEO Aniva Yazzie and the board and other staff to resign because it was obvious they were not able to manage a Navajo Housing Authority that was created by the Navajo Council to construct homes.
Looking at all of that, this is Phil, looking at all of that, you know, it's really unbelievable that these things are happening in our midst and it is not brought out to the public. And I believe the caller that was in here earlier talking about transparency and also being accountable, I think those are two critical areas that I think our leadership needs to understand to move ahead and to have progress made. You know, this is not the first time I've heard about these things. I know that at some point in time there were other programs in the tribal government that had to give money back to the federal government. I mean, these were things that I heard about perhaps 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and that seems to be, I don't know, the tribal government's legacy of not doing what they say they were going to do and having to give money back to entities that basically have oversight over these functions. So, you know, it needs to change. When I say change, there has to be a paradigm shift. We have to take a critical look at policy. We have to take a critical look at the people who are going to be put in positions of authority and leadership. Those are the areas that we really need to focus on in order to have any kind of dynamic, meaningful change for our people here.
Thank you for those words, Mr. Buhaus, and thank you for coming in and sitting down and chatting with us, and also like to say thank you to Yolanda. And I'd also like to thank Cal Nez for his decision, which is awesome, to turn over politics on the Navajo Nation radio show to me, Marley Shabala. And I want to tell the listeners that I will certainly do my best to bring the best information that is available. That information, again, is your information. That information is yours because it's about your Navajo Nation government. The Navajo Nation government is yours. The president and vice president are public servants. The Navajo Nation council delegates are public servants. All of the Navajo Nation elected officials are your public servants. They are accountable to you. They take an oath when they actually take their seats in the president's office, in the council, the education board, the election supervisors. They make a promise to us, to each and every one of you, to uphold the laws of the Navajo Nation. And those laws include the fundamental laws of the Diné. These are laws that are not made by man. They are made by our Holy Ones. These are our teachings. And we received a bit of that from Mr. Filmer Buhaus when he talked about homes. And it was so appropriate at this time because homes are sacred. And that's where our children are. Who would throw children out of a home? Who would throw elders out of a home? I heard the council delegates talking about how the veterans had come to them just before they received the report from Navajo Housing Authority. And they said that a veteran came home, couldn't get any kind of assistance, and so re-enlisted. He came home, folks. He came home in a box. So prayers for all our fallen warriors, for all the homeless people, and even for our elected officials and our administrators, that they will truly think about the people. And I ask you to tune in next week. And Mr. Filmer Buhaus, would you say a few words?
Yeah. Washington in Hohodni, Kodigit on Hundredness, ah, ne what ego has ah, what ego in Habakonos and all the co, de Kodo. Ad nejde kon sákes, benahat a bez ani pa Italia. Ažanda obyčejně až čírande, kde nehytřiš, kde nehytřiš, ad nájde nyní, co ta obyčejně až čí, bez ani nejtěžko nehytřiš, do nehytřiš, až co ta ebechat nít eila kon, co nejdat eila kon benášte nejkátole, co ek jako kdo jatí, jako achelan kdo, co ta nítí nítole.
Thank you, Mr. Buhaus, and thank you to our listeners and those individuals who called in and shared their thoughts and their feelings with us. And we will be back here again on the airwaves, Blog Talk Radio, every Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. And we would like you to please call in and let us know what your thoughts are. So, you know, we have a Facebook. It's called Politics on the Navajo Nation. Please go there and look at some of the news and posts that are being made. And there's a lot of chat about the Navajo Nation candidates. And we are also asking that each and every one of you join in next week again. I really encourage you to share with us what your thoughts are, and I really appreciate Delbert's thoughts regarding, some of our listeners are very, very concerned about what's happening in the Navajo government, and I know that they are only one of many that share that same concern, just like Tino, and his concerns about homes and houses. And again, we were broadcasting out of the Navajo Nation Quality Inn here in Winter Rock, Arizona, which is the capital of the Navajo Nation. This is where the Navajo Nation Council is, the Office of the President and Vice President. Thank you all again.
You're listening to Navajo Digital Radio, politics on the Navajo Nation. The radio show that raises standards of Navajo intellect. A real paradigm shift. No double talk, no fool. Operating Navajo Graphic Design and Advertising Agency, Calnez Designs.